Hello, everybody. Welcome back to episode 154 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and I'm here to even the score.
Oh, nice. The score is
1-3. I was going to say the score was 2-2, and then I was like, that score is even.
Well, that way you don't have to do anything. You just sit back and relax. The score has been evened. You're welcome. And I'm your other host, Mike. And all this new treasure creation and synergy we are seeing has me saying oof. Specifically collector oof, because I'm going to play it in every deck.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander.
So we are getting a new secret lair from one of our new favorite companies, Beetle and Grimm. So we just within the last couple of months got the Kamigawa Neon Dynasty Platinum Edition that we got to open up. That was really, really cool. And they announced on Twitter that they are doing an MTG secret lair, and that launches on June 13th. But we don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'm curious on if it's going to be something.
It's got to be cards. I mean, obviously it's cards. Yeah. But I wonder if there's additional product that comes with it this time.
I'm thinking, like, so the one thing we know about Beetle and Grimm's in terms of Magic the Gathering is the Kamigawa Neon Dynasty Platinum Edition and Silver Editions that they made. But we assume that it's going to be relevant to a block that's coming out soon. So maybe Baldur's Gate, since they do tend to do a lot of Dungeons & Dragons stuff. So maybe some Baldur's Gate cards that are fashioned to the Beetle and Grimm's staff or something.
Oh, wait. What if it's really popular cards, but in a variant of the D&D rulebook frame?
Ooh, I would like that.
So like really popular commanders that clearly are not from a D&D set, but maybe with its own alternate D&D.
That would be very
frame, right? So you could get like a, I don't know, a Purphoros. I mean, probably not Purphoros. We've already had that in a secret layer, but a very popular one in Arcades, which is a dragon. So that'd be kind of cool in the special the player's handbook or whatever they call that frame.
Yeah, it is really cool to see that, like, because I know we've played some Dungeons and Dragons campaigns within the Magic universe, so it's cool to see stat blocks for some of these characters and stuff in there. So definitely that would be
Would make sense. That would kind of make sense. That's our guess. So we'll probably find, I wonder if we'll find out ahead of June 13th or if it's going to be like, hey, live today, you can get this.
Yeah.
So if you are listening to this now, June 13th is in just a few weeks, but that is a Monday. It is on a Monday, June 13th. So if you follow us on Twitter or in our Discord, you will hear about it as soon as we do on June 13th.
We also wanted to say thank you to a brand new patron of ours, Mike Flucher. Thank you so much. What is Mike's portion of the project that he has to take care of for us?
Oh, I haven't been working on it. I hope you have been.
Oh, this is why we keep recruiting people to the project, so neither of us actually have to do anything.
We don't have to work on the project
anymore. That's right. That's right.
We did get asked on stream just a couple of weeks ago, like what kind of project we were doing it for and what level of school. And I don't want to be doing like grad school or like capstone projects. Mm-mm. Like, no, thank you.
At this point, I think we only know like the three letters, the hyphen, and the three numbers for our class. We don't know what it's about or what it's for. We just keep recruiting people to do our homework for us.
It's COM like 415.
Yeah, something like
that. I don't know what communication 415 is, but I definitely remember signing up for those and going, well, it's on my list of required courses, so I guess I sign up for it at this time. And you show up and you learn what the course is then.
But in our case, we don't show up. We recruit other people to show up for us so we can stay at home.
But we did check Rate My Professor for them.
That's
so
true.
So we kind of do a little bit of prep.
We got you the best professor, but just so you know, all three options were pretty bad and we're sorry.
Yeah, but you did get the one with four chili peppers.
Nice.
So you know, they are...
Spicy.
Spicy. And before we continue, Mike... Thank you so much. And to everybody else who's listening to our show, we really, really appreciate that you are listening to us every single week, especially our patrons. If you want to support us, you can head to patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and donate for any dollar amount.
And if you're looking for another way to support the podcast, whether you are listening to the podcast on Spotify or watching on YouTube, if you could subscribe, rate, review, and leave comments, we would be most appreciative.
We're online on YouTube. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. You can email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. Honestly, we're online. You can just find us on the internet. So if you're looking for some more of our content, just Google us. You'll find all of our content there. Mike, what are we talking about this week?
So this week we got a new segment that we're trying out. It's called When Did That Happen? Where we're going to look at cards that we didn't realize have been like steadily going up in price for various reasons. And we're going to see where they were and where they are today.
Can I get a price check on some random cardboard? So honestly, when I build a lot of my commander decks, I do have a lot of cards that I am planning on putting into decks. And when we were initially planning this segment, we said, well, let's take a look at cards that we had no idea were that expensive just because we already had our copy, or maybe we needed to buy another copy we haven't bought in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited to share with you these revelations of cards that have gone up in price that we had literally no idea were this expensive. Why don't you start us off with this first one that is mind-boggling for an uncommon?
Yes. This is a card that is near and dear to my heart that I've been playing for since the dawn of me playing Magic the Gathering. The dawn of my time.
2017?
2017. 5 freaking years ago, by the way. And this is Bantu's Monument. It's a 3-color legendary artifact that says black creature spells you cast cost 1 generic less to cast, and whenever you cast a creature spell, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. And like Andy said, this is an uncommon from the Amonkhet set. It was around 14 cents just after release. Obviously, pre-release prices were, I think, around 50 cents or a dollar. But after release, it went down to 14 cents. But if you wanted
big money, 14 cents.
If you wanted to pick up a copy today, it is $5.50. So, $5 doesn't seem like that much money, but coming up from 14 cents, I mean, that's a pretty huge multiplier, like a 50 times multiplier or something like that. So, I mean, the obvious place to play this is like mono black decks because it reduces the cost of your creatures. But honestly, that second part of the text says whenever you cast a creature spell, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. So if you have some sort of like infinite combo with a Cloudstone Curio or something that allows you to bounce creatures back to your hand, maybe you have an Alorin that allows you to cast creatures with mana value 3 or less for free. You don't have to play this in a mono black deck. But again, majority of the people are going to. The reason I have so many of these cards is because I opened a lot of Amonkhet because it was the first set I ever played. So I have a ton of these on top of the fact that I am a very heavy mono black player. And so I've always played this card. And let me tell you, the drain triggers on this, even in just like a casual mono black deck, you're gonna drain 10 times with this card easily.
I like that it's legendary, and I think that does matter.
Yeah.
That the permanent's legendary. It matters in some decks that I play. Like my Niambia Steam Speaker deck just wants to discard a card like this, and I can play that in Niambia. Even if I'm not casting a black creature spell in a blue-white deck, just whenever you cast a creature, I'm not running this in Niambia. But okay. I do like cards like Oketra's Monument from the same cycle.
Yeah, that's the one that creates 1/1 soldiers whenever you cast a creature spell. That's fantastic.
And it reduces the cost of your white creatures.
Yeah. Yeah. So this one, we saw a larger increase in cost here right after like Theros Beyond Death. We did see when Bantu's Monument did rotate out of standard, it actually did go up in price to about $1, $2, something like that. But then Theros Beyond Death, as we know about our Theros blocks, they tend to really like their devotion decks and their monocolor decks. So it makes sense that after Theros Beyond Death, we saw a price increase to about $2. And then from there, it's just been a steady increase, you know, no reprint of this card, only one printing ever in Amonkhet. They didn't have draft boosters, set boosters, and collector boosters back then. It was only draft boosters, so there was only one version of the card available. Well, I guess foil and non-foil, but yeah. So if you want to pick up one of those now, it is going to cost you $5.50 until it gets reprinted.
The only reason I knew about this one being at this price was because last week when we talked about our sleeveless decks, I put this in my Xavo Rakdos Blood Witch deck only because I I built it on a budget, which is really funny saying that we're talking about this not really being that budget for a deck that I'm building with no sleeves.
So sure.
$550. It was one of the top expensive cards in the deck. I think there were like four cards over $5, and this one was there. I also have quite a bit of Amonkhet, but I didn't know this would be so expensive. But yeah, it has been steadily increasing since 2020. And maybe that has to do with the fact that people were at home and buying paper for spell table.
Oh, that could be.
You know, I think as we looked at each of these, a lot of them could have the same type of inference that they were going up since 2020. But, you know. Bantu's Mining are really good. The first card that I have on my list is Mox Amber, which is funny that I'm talking about a card with Mox in the name, because usually the Moxes are expensive,
sure.
obviously bearing a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
But Mox Amber is a legendary artifact, another legendary artifact, wow, that costs zero. And it says, tap to add one mana of any color among legendary creatures or planeswalkers that you control. So this card came out in Dominaria, so it's been out for a few years. When it was in standard, kind of around release, it was around $25, and it shot down after it rotated out, which was in 2019. It dropped to around $7, which was like a really good price, and I believe that's when I actually bought one playset. I said, I don't know, this is legal in Modern. It's a Mox. I mean, it's legendary, but I don't know. It's legal. So I feel like maybe I'm doing things right and maybe I'll play one in Commander. So I picked them up when I could afford them, and they've had quite a few ups and downs actually in 2020. It spiked back up to around $25 to $30 just after Throne of Eldraine. It kind of came back down to $20 around Zendikar Rising. So we're kind of around the, middle or towards the fall before 21, and then it's been steadily increasing. It's now a $50 card, but I definitely think that Pioneer has something to do with this. You know, now it's being played in Pioneer, but it has really been rising a lot since Strixhaven. So I don't know if Strixhaven had anything to do with this specifically, but you know, after Strixhaven, we had Modern Horizons 2. It shot up, and it's just been steadily increasing, and I'm not sure how easily this will be reprinted unless it's in like a Double Masters or a Masters type set. Maybe we'll get it in Double Masters.
Well, we could think to just give it back to us in Dominaria United in a standard set so we can try to break it with a card like Kethis of the Hidden Hand the last time this was in standard. But yeah, no, this card is really, really good, especially for us Commander players. I mean, chances are we're going to, you know, own a legendary creature or planeswalker, seeing as we have one sitting in our command zone most of the time. So Mox Amber being strong there. We even got during Modern Horizon, during Commander Legends, we got Rogrok, Son of Rogra, a zero mana commander that takes advantage of Mox Amber really, really well. That I liked running in some of my mono red decks. But, you know, to your point of the price spike at Strixhaven, you know, two sets right before Strixhaven, we saw Kaldheim, and Kaldheim had a lot of legendaries in there, both. And I guess this wouldn't work if you cast those Kaldheim gods on their equipment side, because it does have to be either a creature or a planeswalker for Mox Amber to tap for a color. But maybe that had something to do with it. Or that was just the time when people pointed at Mox Amber and went, hey, this card should be way more expensive than it is. I don't know what decks in Pioneer it's being played in right now. Do you know if they're like, I know like Emry, Lurker of the Lock was a card that it comboed with back when Throne of Eldraine was a thing. And I know people were trying that out in Modern and stuff. I don't know if maybe that's a play style also in Pioneer. They're both Pioneer legal cards. So maybe there's some combo stuff going on like that with Mox Amber causing the price increase.
I have literally no idea what this is being played in. I just think it's a Mox. It works well in every Commander deck that you have because they're being helmed by a legendary creature or a planeswalker. So I was stunned when I realized this card was more than like $20. I assumed it was still around 25 because I think that was the last time I looked. I mean, after we stopped playing in person for a few years, this was not a card that I talked about or even thought about, honestly. It was something that sat in a binder for forever until I threw one in Niambi. So it was not something I've looked at for at least 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, if it wasn't for Rogue Rock from Commander Legends, I would have been in the same place not looking at that card. So yeah. Cool to see it. So Smothering Tithe, I know everyone knows about this card. Everyone knows this card's, you know, a little bit on the expensive side.
I know this card. Everyone, I know it well.
Everyone knows this Smothering Tithe, this white enchantment, 3 and a white. It says whenever an opponent draws a card, that player must pay 2 generic mana. If the player doesn't, you create a colorless treasure artifact token with tap, sacrifice this artifact, add 1 mana of any color.
I like that you said they must. So you must do this.
Oh, that player may pay 2. You're right. It doesn't say must. I'm just putting in my own words.
Yeah, you must. If you're not on the Smothering Tithe train and you're on the other side, you're like, oh, please, please, dear God, please pay this, because right now this is not going to be good for us.
It's right. That's right. So if you weren't aware, back when this card came out back in Ravnica Allegiance, this was a $2 card at release. And this card is now going for $42.50. So it is a, you know, 21 times price increase on this card. And you may have known that this card was expensive, but the whole reason that I put on this is because I thought this card was like $20 to $30, not a $42 card.
This is the one we were talking when we were prepping for the show. And as we looked at the list, because we do know the cards that each other put on, I said, you didn't know this was $42, and because I own a few copies,
yeah,
and I think this is a card that when I'm building a deck that has white, I know a lot of people are talking about taking it out, and maybe that is the route some people went, because you do have to remember, you do have to ask questions, you do get targeted when you run it. Mm-hmm. I find in most cases mine just eats removal, which is fine, because then you removed this enchantment over, I don't know, something else, maybe sure, you removed it over the Rhystic Study. But I feel like I knew this price because I feel like I still really highly value this card. And I do enjoy playing it, and I don't mind when someone else has it, because you get to see a lot of really big plays when they're enabled with massive amounts of mana, because okay, no one wants to slow down their own gameplay.
Right. I think I have this card in 2 different decks, and I've never moved it, which would be why. And that would be mono white Dejiru Planeswalkers, and then Abzan Tokens. And it's only in there because tokens, and then mono white just kind of needs help sometimes with ramp. So that's why I have it in those 2 decks, and I've never moved them around. So that's probably why I didn't see the price increasing and increasing and increasing. But as we know, we keep seeing more and more treasure synergies being printed in Magic the Gathering. So
a lot.
On top of the fact that, you know, they're always going to print cards that draw people cards, and people are always going to be greedy and not pay the 2 and always allow you to make treasures.
I'm feeling personally attacked across the internet right now, because the answer is I am going to draw 6 and I am not going to pay 12.
Who has 12 mana to draw 6 cards?
Who
Nobody.
Has 12 mana to draw? Well, I paid a lot of mana to draw my 6.
That's right.
You don't have any more left to pay for your taxes.
That's right. There's nothing wrong with that.
We've had some games. I think we had games on stream where I got destroyed by a Smothering Tithe because there was a Trudge Garden combo of some sort.
Nice.
Look it up on one of our. we could find it, but it's on YouTube, and it happened. I forget the commander deck that was playing against me, but it was an Abzan deck, and I was out of life. And there was nothing I could do, and it was rough.
So Smothering Tithe, it did go to $10 shortly after release, but it has slowly been creeping up. Around Ikoria, we saw it get close to about $20. And then between Zendikar Rising and Strixhaven, we just saw it shoot all the way up to $40 as people were getting really excited about building new commander decks, and treasure synergies just kept going up and up and up. And, you know, we had AFR come out shortly after that, and that hit the dip, if you want to call it that, for, you know, the $35 Smothering Tithe got
it
down to
down 10 whole dollars. Yeah, so 35.
And then AFR came out and said, hey, treasures are still really, really, really good. And they went, oh yeah, that's right, I should probably buy more copies of that card, Smothering Tithe. And on top of the fact that it has never seen a reprint other than Throne of Eldraine promo packs, which is a very, very limited printing, not a very relevant one. That is why the price keeps going up. And Wizards, we need a reprint. We really do.
Oh man, do we?
Yeah.
Because we're gonna see so much more.
That's okay. It's okay.
The first commander on our list here, a card that I had I had no idea it was more than $5 at this point, is Aurelia the War Leader. So this is one of the first mythics that I ever opened. So this came out in Gatecrash. The card itself, I don't want to say on release because it was like $12 out the gate and then it shot up to $20. Mm-hmm. But by the time we made it to Dragon's Maze, so two sets later, it had gone down to $5 and it stayed around $5 from 2013 all the way to 2020, when it started raising up after War of the Spark. I don't know what happened during War of the Spark that, you know, maybe just could have just been going up over, you know, the course of time, just popularity in general. But we saw its first initial spike right around Strixhaven to $23. It kind of came back down to 18 and then it shot up at Neon Dynasty to $32.85. And this is a regular non-foil printing of Aurelia the War Leader, which, by the way, has had two reprints. It was in From the Vault Angels, and it was also in the Guilds of Ravnica Guild Kit. So if you bought those little, they were like 60 card decks that had like a really nice enamel pin. It was also in that with an alternate foil artwork, I believe that was, I'm not sure if that one was foil, I guess. But so this has had three printings and the regular version has shot up to $30.
Yeah.
I swear to you, this was a $5 card a week ago. Like if you had asked me, do you know, either you have to give me all your money, mm-hmm. or not, and is over under Aurelia $8, I would have been like under.
Yeah,
I would have given you all my money.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt in my mind. I totally agree. It would have been under, but I guess if you look at it, you know, Boros wasn't a very popular commander deck color scheme, unless it was like artifacts or something. And this is Angels, and I'm sure there's a few Boros Angels decks out there, or just generic combat, I suppose. But when Strixhaven came out, we saw a lot of support for this new two color combination called Lorehold, which is, you know, just way, way, way better than Boros. So maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe Lorehold support, you know, more card draw, more ramp and everything, as people are more willing to build these red-white commander decks. And Aurelia came out. And on top of it, when Kamigawa and Neon Dynasty came out, there actually was a new infinite combo that fits within Aurelia War Leader's color combination with Mirror Box and Splinter Twins. Mirror Box being the brand new card from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty that's just going to allow all the copies of your Aurelia the War Leader that you're making with Splinter Twin get bigger and bigger and bigger to, I think when we did an episode on it. So go back and listen to our Kamigawa Neon Dynasty Commander Spellbook episode. But I think we talked about how it was doing like nearly infinite damage with that combo or something. So hopefully that's the reason why that spiked at the end. And the fact that there's, you know, they're not printing it again. Maybe, like you said, maybe in this next Double Masters, we'll see something like that, because Aurelia does swing twice. So that is on theme for Double Masters. So hopefully we'll see something
like
that.
All right. Ooh, spicy speculation. I'm not sure we'll see. I mean, three printings is quite a bit for a card to still be around $30. It's just a really popular commander. Taking a look, at least on EDHREC, it's the 11th. It's not even in the top 10. It's the 11th most popular red-white commander. So it's not even in the top. And by the way, the 11th most popular red-white commander has 1,100 plus decks.
Okay.
That's a lot for being that number compared to Oskir the Reconstructor, which is 5,200 decks. Aurelia, I had no idea. When did that happen?
Well,
it really did happen in 2020 all the way up to 2022. So that's exactly when it happened.
Yeah, very recently. Okay, so I cheated like I normally do on these list episodes. Oh, man. I know. And this next one item is actually five items. but they all go together and you'll understand why. And these are the five different medallions that we have, each one pertaining to a specific one color in Magic and helps reduce the casting cost of everything. They have seen a couple prints, so we're specifically going to talk about the Commander 2014 printing of Pearl Medallion, Sapphire Medallion, Jet Medallion, Ruby Medallion, and Emerald Medallion. Each one of these costs two generic mana, isn't an artifact, and the Pearl Pearl Medallion lets white spells cost one less. Sapphire is blue. Jet is black. Ruby is red. And Emerald is green. So most of these around the time of their printing back in 2014, obviously Commander wasn't as popular as it is today, but all of them could be had for $2 or less. Where now today you can't get the Emerald Medallion is the most affordable one at $11, and you can't get any of the other ones for under $20. So Pearl Medallion is $24, Sapphire Medallion is $28, Jet Medallion is $34, Ruby Medallion is $32, and like I said, Emerald Medallion is $11. And that might have something to do with the fact that the green one, the Emerald Medallion, you know, people don't tend to play a lot of artifacts in their mono green deck. Maybe they prefer to play, my creature that says green creature spells I cast cost one less to cast over an Emerald Medallion. But these medallions are huge, huge, huge. And not just in mono color decks, but also in like two and three color decks to start reducing cost of your gold border cards and gold frame cards and everything like that, your multicolored cards. These medallions do have other printings. Pearl Medallion is the one that's been printed the least, even though it is not the most expensive. It's only been printed in Tempest and Commander 2014, where Sapphire has been printed on the list, so not a very substantial reprint. Jet Medallion also printed on the list. Again, all of these were printed originally in Tempest and then Commander 2014. Ruby Medallion was printed in Commander Anthologies Volume 2 from its 2014 Commander printing, so not a very significant reprint. And then Emerald Medallion, the same thing in the original Commander Anthology, so also not a significant reprint. So all of these cards are definitely, quote-unquote, I know we don't like to use the word staples, but they're a card that you're definitely looking to put in your monocolor decks, unless I guess it's a devotion deck where every single one of your spells has all pips, no matter what, in which case, good on you. That's a great deck. I want to see it. But these are going to be really good in your single color decks. I put them in all my decks. I only really have a lot of Jet Medallions sitting around.
You have a lot of Jet Medallions?
I have like 6 or 7 Jet Medallions sitting around. Ruby Medallions, I have the next amount with like 3 or 4. Emerald Medallions, I have 3 or 4. And then I don't know if I have a single Pearl or Sapphire Medallion.
So the Ruby Medallion, that was in, right? That came in the pre-con of Duretti, right?
Yes, it did.
Okay, so I think that's the only reason I have a Ruby Medallion. I bought a Jet Medallion, and that is in my Jaren deck. But Sapphire, I opened, I believe it was from the list, from New Capenna.
Mm-hmm.
It was either New Capenna or it was Neon Dynasty. I'm not sure if it is still on the list or if it was removed from the list, but that's why I own one. And I felt like a big winner getting a Sapphire Medallion on the list because
it's also
as expensive. And it wasn't like a 6-cent card from...
Right.
From the list.
Well, these are actually less expensive than they were a short amount of time ago. I mean, Sapphire Medallion was at $40 after the release of Kaldheim because of Orvar the All Form creating a bunch of different copies of Sapphire Medallion, making all of your spells basically cost one blue.
I knew were expensive. I guess I didn't realize the price, but I assumed they were all in their 20s, but seeing some in their 30s.
And if you want the Tempest version, you're definitely paying in the 30s and 40s. If you're loving that old style art, like I know you do, Andy.
I don't. I'm not. No, give me the newest border you possibly can. Honestly, once a card starts to get over $10, between like $10 and $15, it's on that point. It makes the point on your list where it's like, I don't know if I need this card.
Sure.
I'm just going to find a different option.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the medallions, I don't own many or put many in decks because they're just too expensive. I'm not made of money.
No.
I still don't wish I was made of money. I like being made out of
flesh
and bones.
I like being made out of flesh. Andy Flory 2022.
Let's talk about the Scarab God, which I don't believe is made out of flesh.
No.
The Scarab God, a card that was a menace in standard, was a menace in our playgroup because you played it. I'm kidding, but it was just really, really good. But a card that honestly was like $45 when it was legal and standard. After it rotated out, it started coming down, and it did get down to about $10, which is what I assume the Scarab God was literally at today, because it also got a reprinting in Double Masters. Mm-hmm. So I said, I mean, this card can't possibly be that expensive. So Theros Beyond Death came out, and it kind of went back up. It went up to around $30, but then it came back down to $10. And then, oops, we hit Midnight Hunt and Crimson Vow. And turns out zombies are a thing the Scarab God likes because it cares about zombies. So the Scarab God is a 5/5 legendary god for 3 of blue and a black. It says at the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent loses X life and you scry X, where X is the number of zombies you control. So you just want to have a bunch of zombies and make it to your upkeep. And then it also has pay 4, so 2, a blue and a black. You exile a creature card from a graveyard and you make a copy of it, but it's a 4/4 black zombie. And then it has my favorite God clause, the Hour of Devastation Gods, which is when it dies, return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. So they're just like they're recurring gods that are really, really hard to get rid of. After Midnight Hunt and Crimson Vow came out, this card went back up to $40, and it's around $35 now. So $35 with 2 printings for a zombie tribal commander, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. I like Wilhelm more personally.
Sure.
But the Scarab God, great option. But I did want to talk about the fact that this invocation is $350. Mm-hmm. I did not know this. It has gone up at least for the last 3 years by $100 on average per year. So the Amonkhet invocations are stonks. They are game stonks, is what I've learned. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
The Locust God, I did not even look up for this, which is an invocation that I have. It's probably also ridiculous because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like the Locust God's played more because I play it. Maybe that's why I think that, because I see it. And I know that there's other content creators who built it and play it regularly on their streams or talk about it. But maybe the Scarab God really is more popular because it is a tribal deck. The Locust God is not tribal. It is just draw cards deck.
Well, it could be, right? If you wanted to build it that way, you could try to build it insect tribal. But the problem is you don't start creating insects until you have your commander out, and the commander costs 6. So it might be difficult. Plus, insects might not be well supported in blue-red, I imagine. I did look up the Locust God. It is $154 for that invocation there. The Scarab God, surprisingly, is the most expensive invocation from Hour of Devastation and Amonkhet, even more expensive than the Force of Will invocation. So
really, I wouldn't have guessed that either.
No, definitely not. But very cool. I love Scarab God. I had been looking to pick up a Scarab God invocation for the past 4 years, and it has not reached a price that I'm comfortable with yet.
Hey, I bet it will next year.
As soon as they reprint
$550.
Yeah, if they reprint the invocations at common in like a jumpstart booster box or something, then maybe I can pick one up for that price. But yeah, like you said, the Wilhelt deck came out, and I think a lot of people took Wilhelt and they went like, well, I could put Pauper Factory in here in combo, or I could replace Wilhelt with Scarab God and do value stuff. It's like, let's try value stuff and let's do it. Value stuff zombies is a lot of fun. It's not, in my opinion, it's not the strongest way to play zombies. I think combo is the strongest way to play zombies. And if you do have access to a Training Grounds, which is a card that's also steadily gone up in price since probably Strix,
not on our list
it
today,
probably
though.
Spiked at Strixhaven, let's be honest. Everything seems to be doing it. But yeah, being able to get his activation down to just blue black makes him very, very, very strong and scary. And if you do play with him, you'll probably never untap with Scarab God or with Scarab God with zombies. It, at least in my opinion, I think it's happened like once.
I make sure you don't.
Because
make sure you don't.
I think
me personally.
I think I did win the one time I did untap with it once, which makes sense.
You did.
Yeah. So definitely, if you're playing against Scarab God, don't take my word for it. Kill the Scarab God. Just
take
do it.
My word for it.
Okay, so I found a land that I really, really like, and I play it in a lot of my commander decks that has gone up in price by 10 times. And it's a rare from Kaladesh called Inventor's Fair. So it's a legendary land, another legendary permanent on our list here, that says at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 3 or more artifacts, you gain 1 life. The line of text on this card that no one ever remembers,
no
including myself.
No one ever gets it. No one ever gets it.
Including myself. I honestly, I forgot it was there until I looked up the card and read it. Went, oh yeah, it does do that, doesn't it? Yep. Gain some life.
More artifacts.
So you could tap it to add a colorless to your mana pool. It doesn't come in tapped or anything, which is very cool. And it has another activated ability of pay 4 generic mana, tap it, and sacrifice it to search your library for an artifact card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and shuffle your library. But you can only activate this ability if you control 3 or more artifacts, especially in today's day and in age when you have treasures supported in literally all 5 colors. Controlling 3 artifacts shouldn't be that much of a problem. And chances are you have a very powerful artifact somewhere in your deck to use for a combo, or maybe it's a value piece, maybe it's a Chroma's Monument or something. I don't know, but I bet you have an artifact that you can look for. This is a really good card late game, because obviously it does, I call it costing 5 mana to do it, because you have to tap and sacrifice itself plus 4 other mana. So for 5 mana to go fetch for any artifact at instant speed at the end step right before your turn, you can do that and go to town.
Go grab your Darksteel Forge. Go grab, I mean, it's just any artifact. It can be an artifact creature.
Yeah,
in your Shorikai Vehicles deck, go grab your Vest Vehicle.
Or, you know, you could go grab Halo Fountain or Time Sieve, now that, you know, we have some new win conditions in Halo Fountain, or some new treasure synergy to help us take infinite turns with Time Sieve. I'm sure there's ways you could do it in less degenerate ways than I suggest, but
you could just go get a Mind Stone.
You could get a Soul Ring. how about a spell book that costs, you could cost right out of your hand for 0 to make it so you don't have a maximum hand size. Maybe you really need that for some reason.
You know, the only deck that I played in Venter's Fair in was Rona, Disciple of Gix, which was my dedicated artifact deck. And I might have had this in Duretti Artifacts when I had that mono red deck, but it's been like 2 years since I've played that Duretti deck. So
sure.
The Inventor's Fair is in the, I have a box of what I, there's literally with Sharpie written on it. It's called Commander Shells. Because if I ever want to rebuild that commander, I really did like how the decks were built. I like left the core cards that don't fit into any other deck. Like
maybe
there. So I bet my Inventor's Fair is sitting with my Duretti deck still.
I'm surprised you don't have it in Niambi, because I bet there's some good legendary artifacts for you to search in that deck.
I actually think there's only the one that you pay 4 and you tap it, you put a historic card directly onto the battlefield.
Primal Amulet.
Nope. Sure isn't.
Not Quicksilver Amulet either, because it's the other one that isn't that one.
But I don't think there is. But in Rona, Disciple of Gix, it was cool because I could just go grab I was mostly getting it because the life gain worked, and then I could tutor if I wanted later, but it never really did much for me there.
Okay.
Taking a look at my artifacts, the only one that I literally only have one legendary artifact, and it's Thran Temporal Gateway.
Okay.
In Niambi, so it doesn't really make sense there. And I only run 7 artifacts anyway, so I'm probably not going to get that life gain. But Inventor's Fair is a card I expected to be $3.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, Andy, but it is a $9 rare land. With the reprint,
because it was on the list.
It was on the list.
At some point. Yeah, I don't know which list.
It was on the list starting in November of 2020, so just before Call Time. So it started with the Call Time set boosters.
Wait, was that 2020 or 2021?
I'm sorry, it was 20. I'm looking at November 2020 of when they announced that Inventor's Fair was going to be put on the list, and the prices for cards start tracking then. But it didn't get printed until Call Time set boosters.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah, good stuff. The next card that I have is Starfield of Nyx, which is a card that I actually wasn't quite sure where it was going to be, because when I played with Starfield of Nyx, it was during Origins or after Origins, and Starfield of Nyx was really cool and standard for all of 5 minutes, because there was like this weird period where like a set came out, and then when the next one came out, all of like Theros rotated, so then Starfield of Nyx was still legal, but there was no more artifact, like the enchantments like weren't really there.
Mm-hmm.
So Starfield of Nyx is an enchantment for 4 and a white. It says at the beginning of your upkeep, you can return target enchantment card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It says as long as you control 5 or more enchantments, each other non-aura enchantment you control is a creature in addition to its other types and has base power and toughness each equal to its mana value. I converted mana cost to mana value with my eyeballs right there.
Oh, good conversion of the conversion words.
Yeah. It was like, it was like transposing music. It's like I'm a piano player.
Ah.
I don't play piano. Anyway, Starfield of Nyx is a really cool enchantment that I do run in my Satsuki Saga stack. That's really cool. And
nice.
I did run Starfield of Nyx when I had my Estrid enchantment stack. So Estrid is the planeswalker in Bant colors that Estrid the Mast that cares about enchantments. So I ran it in both. I only have one copy. I don't have a foil copy or anything, but I assume this card was like $4 or $5, honestly. And the card is $18 now. When it came out, the card was around $2 from 2016 until sometime midway through 2018. And it went up, it looks like, after M19 came out. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but then it kind of came back down to $5. And then after Theros Beyond Death, which makes sense because we had, I guess, some enchantments had come out. And then leading up to now, the card is at $18. I did not expect to see this card that expensive. And it only has a single printing, but it did spike when Neon Dynasty came out. So I'm not surprised to see that it did spike with the enchantment set.
Yeah, with both of the enchantment set, right? Theros with all the god enchantments and Kamigawa. I did need to look up, I actually asked our judge in our Discord today about a ruling because I was interested. With Starfield of Nyx, you do have enchantment tokens, and I didn't even realize it because Estrid the Mask also makes enchantment tokens. When Starfield of Nyx reaches its threshold to create or to make all of your non-aura enchantments into creatures, if you do control enchantment tokens that are not copies of other enchantments, obviously, because then mana value gets converted over. They do end up getting overridden their power and toughness in case they are creatures. I guess the shrines from Goshen Tai, which is a brand new commander that we got from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty set boosters only, that creates 1/1 colorless shrine enchantment creature tokens whenever Goshen Tai or another non-token shrine enters the battlefield. Those shrine tokens are actually going to get turned into 0/0s and then die immediately. So just watch out for that Nombo.
Oh no.
but I mean obviously you can't look past that first line of text of being able to return enchantments from your graveyard to the battlefield every single one of your upkeeps. I'm really happy to hear that you're playing it in your Satsuki deck, because I think with sagas automatically going to your graveyard after they're, you know, done and matured anyways, it's a perfect card.
After the story is told, it was already told, we're gonna tell it again, because that's
right.
How I tell stories to you.
Well, then
Coyle will be like, Andy, you've literally told me this like and that's what Starfield of Nyx does on the battlefield. I, looking at the Satsuki deck that I have, I mean, there's quite a few enchantments in general. Hallowed Haunting, Elspeth Conquers Death, Sigil of the Empty Throne, Sphere of Safety, Tales of Master Sashiro, and Fall of the Thran, which they're just expensive enchantments that are going to be five or six mana value creatures, depending on whether or not they stay out. But I would get a lot of three mana value creatures if my sagas were also creatures at the time that they entered the battlefield, I guess, and could swing and tell their story.
Are any of those sagas 4-chapter sagas? So they're out there for an extra turn.
There is a 4-chapter saga, the first Uroan Games.
There you go. So that one you can swing for 2 turns with before it dies to its own lore counters.
I believe it is the only 4-mana saga that I am running, and I actually don't know if there's other 4-mana sagas is not it's not really a thing. Like, there aren't a ton of them, right? So I don't think it's very popular. But I do also believe that it would turn my Urza Saga into dead. Non-aura enchantment, and Urza Saga is an enchantment land. So Urza Saga, non-bow.
Yeah,
I don't really think it's going to be around when I do that.
No, hopefully not. okay, so we have a counter spell here next on our list.
I love it already.
Right? And it's a counter spell that, you know, given if this was printed in standard or if this was printed for a modern direct set or something, it does seem like a little bit too much of a niche or a corner case. But in our world of Commander, holy crap, is this a good counter spell. So Swan Song, I'm sure you've heard of it. For 1 blue, it's an instant, says counter target enchantment, instant, or sorcery spell, and its controller puts a 2/2 bird creature token with flying onto the battlefield. So not only in a 1v1 format are you're not countering planeswalkers or creatures with this counterspell, but you're also giving your opponent a flying 2/2, which can swing for 10% of your life every single turn. So that's probably why it's not being seen in any 1v1 formats, but we see this play in Commander all the time, which is driven demand up high. So when this card was first printed back in Theros, you could pick it up for under $1. So 86 cents. But today, it costs about $13.75 to pick up the cheapest copy, which is still the Theros copy. There are two other printings of this in Commander 2016 and a Secret Lair series, Ornithological Studies, both of which the Commander 2016 is a $16 card and the Secret Lair series is a $20 card. So this counterspell, you know, it's good for Commander because chances are one of those three types of spells is going to get cast, and a 2/2 isn't that big a deal.
I'm still stuck on doing math in my head. Is it 10% or 5%?
So 20 divided by 2?
Just 10.
Okay. Yeah, it's 1/10 of your life.
You said 10%. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Okay, I don't do math, and here I am, full on Winona Ryder, sitting here with the definitely confused look on my face, going, "Is that really a Winona Judd?"
Yeah.
Okay, so Swansong, this is a card that I actually knew was expensive because I probably have 15 copies.
But did you know it was $13, or did you think it was just like, hey, it's an $8 counterspell like my Disallow is and stuff like that?
I'm pretty sure the last time I looked at it, it was over 10. So I'm not surprised seeing it at 14. I don't own the Ornithological Studies version, which is one of the regrets. One of my big regrets is not getting that one, because it is a pretty swan compared to this. Well, I guess they're both pretty swans. I just like the one that seems like it's going to be at a pond near you. I don't hesitate putting this in a Commander deck.
No, it's great, and it doesn't feel bad. Like,
if I'm running blue, I kind of always run swans.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good go-to. A one mana, it's probably like a deal you can't refuse nowadays. Another one mana counterspell. It just might be a little bit too good.
To have treasures.
Oh, but would you rather me have like my Craterhoof Behemoth? I don't know if deal you can't refuse can counter a creature spell. Don't at me, or do at me in the comments. That'll get you to comment.
don't at me. Actually, no, do please, at me. Please at me.
Yeah.
I don't know. A deal you can't refuse? Is it a deal?
Yeah, I think so. A deal you can't refuse from
New Capenna. The car, it's not deal. It's an offer you can't
refuse. It's an offer you can't refuse.
I keep typing in deal and I was like, it's not here. So it says counter target non-creature spell.
Yeah, okay,
it's
non-creature.
It's two treasures, so non-creature.
So it is technically a little bit more open-ended than Swansong, because Swansong can't counter planeswalker spells or artifact spells, where an offer you can't refuse can. But the difference is two treasures versus a 2/2 flying bird. And I guess, you know, an offer you can't refuse is an uncommon that was just printed. I think it is a couple dollars though, even for an uncommon, but a lot cheaper than Swansong, in case you're interested in that.
A lot cheaper. Yeah, because it is $1.29.
Yeah.
If you got it in a special print version, which I think is like a promo pack, it's like almost $5.
But, oh, nice.
The last card on my list is one that I don't run in a single deck. I had no idea this card was this expensive, and the card is Waste Not. And I don't know if you knew this one, but this card is $14 now. It's like $14.50 almost. It came out in M15, and it was also printed in Commander 2016. And the card is an enchantment for one and a black. It says, whenever an opponent discards a creature card, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. It also says, whenever an opponent discards a land card, you add black-black to your mana pool. And finally, whenever an opponent discards a non-creature, non-land card, you draw a card. So it does a lot, as long as you're making your opponents discard things. So cards that actually force discard, cards that are wheel effects like a Windfall or a Wheel of Misfortune, that have everybody discard and draw new cards. That works really, really well with Waste Not. Not really in black for me. I'm usually running like wheel-type effects in like blue red. So okay. I never really added the black. So I'm not really running a Kess deck or a Nekusar deck. So I understand Waste Not could be very good in those decks. But from 2015 all the way until, again, 2020, man, this card was like $3. Mm-hmm. It went up right around Double Masters, and I have literally no idea why. It came back down and then spiked hard at Strixhaven. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if it's related to that Magecraft combo that came out with Professor Onyx and then the discard thing. And I'm just not sure it, but this one on this list is the one that's steadily coming down. So mm-hmm. it's at 14 now, but it was at 25. So maybe it's normalizing from some sort of a combo that came out. And I was actually thinking this was potentially related to Tiny Bones, but the timing doesn't line up for me for Jumpstart.
Okay. So, well, I see a small,
or is that, yeah, oh, no. small spike around Double Masters.
That's
Jumpstart.
Yep.
So it went up, and I assume it, okay, so it went up for Jumpstart because of Tiny Bones, mm-hmm. and then came back down because people, I've actually never played against or with a Tiny Bones deck. I think that people realized maybe this isn't so fun. So
Top of the fact that it was so expensive just to try to get a Tiny Bones.
Yeah, and maybe we should look at some Jumpstart cards too. But then Strixhaven came out, and this shot way up. So yeah. A card I had no idea and would not have guessed was 1450.
So that combo you're referring to with it uses Chain of Smog. Would make you yourself discard the card if you wanted the chain to keep going, which Waste Not wouldn't hit. I think this is more related to a couple cards that were printed in Kaldheim. We have Turgrid, God of Fright, which cared about your opponents discarding cards and their creatures dying, and Kroxa, which also forced your opponents to discard cards on enter the battlefield.
Okay.
Which came out just before Strixhaven. So as people were building their commander decks between Kaldheim and Strixhaven, you know, people were putting that stuff in. And there was definitely more discard synergies that were printed in Strixhaven 2. I know there's one that's being played in Standard a lot that makes someone discard two cards and then exiles their graveyard and stuff. So I know there was some really good discard synergies within the Silver Quill and Willow Dusk schools. So that could have a lot to do with it too. And in terms of the price decrease, I think the connive mechanic we just saw in Streets of New Capenna really cares about yourself discarding, which again, Waste Not doesn't really care about. So you see cards more like Bone Miser actually increasing in price right now, which was a card printed in the Anji Falcon Wrath Precon deck, one reprinting on the list. But that card, you know, was sitting at like $4 and stuff. And now that we have a bunch of these Kaldheim cards, or sorry, not Streets of New Capenna cards coming out now, it's shot up to $10. So I think you're going to see like an inverse curve of Waste Not and Bone Miser, even though they both work with wheels. So if you do have a wheel commander, like you said before, Andy, about Kess or Nekusar, I had this in my Nekusar deck for sure. Yeah. It works amazing. Bone Miser works too. You're going to see both of them there. So if we ever see like more wheel support and stuff, you'll definitely see both of these cards increase in price again. And Waste Not, I've even seen Waste Not played in Modern before. It's very niche though. It's a 2-mana enchantment, so it is fast enough to do something before you lose the game in Modern. And maybe if you force your opponent to discard their entire hand, you'll actually survive and be able to do a lot of stuff with it. But just definitely not enough play to see, you know, significant cost impact there. So, but I do love this card. I'm really glad you had it on the list.
Yeah, it was mono black. I was like, I'm not surprised. I have no idea what this card is. But that's it for this week. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any cards that you had no idea were as expensive as they are, send them to us. And as always, I'm on Twitter at Andy Flory.
And I'm on Twitter at Wormcoil Engine. Of course, we want to give a special thanks to Ryan Nichols, our producer, and Chris Wolf, who handles all of our graphic design. Thank you so much, the both of you, for everything that you do. And to all of you listeners out there, have a great Memorial Day weekend. I hope you get an opportunity to play some Magic, play some Commander. I know we're going to play a lot of Magic this weekend. Maybe nonstop. Yeah, so.
Yeah, like nonstop. We are actually getting together and for like 3 days. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Everybody enjoy your weekend, and we'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.